Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettea, along with Charlie Long in studio. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our Pick 6 segment that we'll have this week at 4:20. Chrissy Floyd, who covers both the NFL and college football for USA Today, will join us. She had an interview with Drew Brees and talk about his comments on who he would pick as the Saints' new head coach, and also about the Saints quarterbacking situation. At 4:40, Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, will join us. And it was officially announced 13 freshman players that LSU has signed. They'll join the team midterm. So they'll be in spring drills, and we'll get Zach's comments on Nussmeier and also 13 freshmen joining the LSU football team come this spring. Charlie, it was officially made known today that Anthony Weaver, virtual interview. Man, I'm getting old when I look at my grandkids and see how quick they're growing up. But in the mirror, don't lie neither. But man, I scouted Anthony Weaver when he came out of Notre Dame. He was a 2002 pick that year, second round pick. Went to the Ravens. I think he played 8 years in the NFL. I think he almost split it, like 4 years with the Ravens, 4 years with the Texans. Then he became the defensive line coach and the assistant head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. This year, he was the defensive coordinator for the Miami Dolphins. I know a little bit about Anthony because Austin Clark, who comes to our Louisiana line camp every year, Anthony Weaver kept him on the staff. He's the defensive line coach. We all call him Cal Bear. We get interviews with Cal Bear every year, and he talks about defensive line play, and he's a Pete Jenkins protege. So Anthony Weaver gets an interview, and a guy that has played in the NFL, certainly coached in the NFL. It'll be one of many interviews that'll come down the pike for the Saints. But first one today, being Anthony Weaver, and he's a guy that a lot of people in this league thinks eventually he'll get a shot as a head coach.
Yeah, I agree as well, Mike. And as far as Anthony Weaver's playing career, he started with Baltimore, as you mentioned, 2002 second round pick, was there until 2005. Then he was with the Texans from 2006 through 2008. This was his first year as a DC in Miami. I mean, he had been a defensive assistant, mostly, as you mentioned, a defensive line coach throughout his time as a coach in the NFL. But as a DC in Miami, it's kind of intriguing because what he did this year with that Dolphins defense, the Dolphins didn't make the playoffs this year. Now, granted, a lot of that was because of Tua missing some time. Their offense wasn't that great. Their defense was still really solid. I mean, they were top 10 in yards allowed per game, top 10 in points allowed per game. As you mentioned, he's probably going to get a head coaching opportunity at some point.
Yeah, I think this is kind of his initial shot to go in for an interview. Man, I remember talking to Jim Haslett about this. He was like, man, the first time I went in for an interview, I was lousy. I was terrible. There was no way they were going to hire me after that. And he said, I went to a couple more, then finally getting the Saints job. So for Anthony Weaver, it's an opportunity to get that initial interview. And I think somewhere down the line, either in college or pro football, Anthony's going to get his opportunity.
Yeah, and I agree. So it may not even happen this offseason cycle, because once again, he's just a one-time DC, and you know, you're kind of be taking a swing there with someone like Anthony Weaver to be your next head coach. But it's worth, you know, checking out, doing your due diligence, so to speak. He's just one of the names that's on the board at this point, Mike. I mean, we've listed off at least half a dozen, going upwards on 8, probably going to be at 10 very soon as well.
Man, the Jets, what it is, like the 15 Jets are or
already,
16?
Yeah, I mean, the Jets are already past like 15 at this point, so like they're interviewing everyone. But
and I think this afternoon they announced that they want to interviews. They put in the kind of work requests for Steve Spagnuolo.
Oh, wow.
And so have the Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, yeah. Steve, he's got some skins. What he did with the Giants, they won a Super Bowl, and they beat that undefeated New England Patriots team. He became a head coach with the Rams. That didn't work out too well. Then he came here, and it was bad.
It was terrible.
Oh, that was as bad a defensive team. And after 1 year, and Sean Payton decided we got to do something else, he goes to Kansas City, and it's like a different coach, totally different coach. And he's been a big part of that coaching staff that has went to all these Super Bowls and has got a chance to three-peat it.
Well, you would think that Spags would be the more coveted piece than the opposite side of the football, which the Jets have just officially completed an interview with Matt Nagy, the OC of the Chiefs. It's like, I don't
know.
If you watch the Chiefs play, Mike, you and I both know this. It's the defense that oils the engine. Yes, they have Pat Mahomes, but if you're looking at their potential for a three-peat, which has never been done in NFL history, it's going to be the defense that carries the load. So what Spags has done there is the DC's been fantastic. He's one of the most important coordinators in the entire NFL.
Yes, he is.
And so if you're looking at one of the coordinators for a head coaching position from the Chiefs, I think it would be Spags. I don't think it would be, you know, Matt Nagy.
That would be my opinion. Pass on Matt Nagy. I kind of saw what happened in Chicago. Now, again, he wasn't given a lot of help sometimes. And
he got run out of Chicago,
yeah,
right?
That personnel, man, they similar to the Saints. You got to change up how you pick in players, how you bring in players in. Even though it wasn't officially announced, you can see it kind of contract-wise. And it was funny that we talked about this Monday night. We had Joe Curry on, who I think does as good a job as anybody of breaking down the salary cap and the type moves that could create money. And Ryan Ramczyk, who restructured his deal, and this is based off his 2021 contract extension. And this is really an accounting deal. And it's very similar to when Drew Brees retired. And you allowed two post June 1st designations where you can break up the money. So in his restructure today, it eliminated the $8 million base salary for 2025. It reduced the base salary to 1.255, and it freed up $16.7 million in cap space. It allows the Saints to carry Ramczyk on the roster for $12.3 million until June 1st. Now, prior to that, the cap figure would have been $29 million. There's still $23 million in dead money. So now you're able to split it. If you and that's what's going to happen after June 1st. He's going to announce his retirement, and you got to carry it. It's not like when you retire, that gets wiped off the books. It doesn't work that way. So they'll split it. There'll be $11.083 million in 2025, $11.98 million in 2026, and you can do it for two, so there'll be somebody else. But basically, this is an accounting deal to try to get you down under the salary cap. And even now, with that deal, you still over $50 million over the caps. But it was so funny. Joe Curry, when I asked him about it, he said, this will probably be the first move they make with Ryan Ramczyk. And he called it exactly like it happened today.
And Ryan's degenerative knee issues just kind of ended his career.
Sad.
And it really is sad, Mike, because when he played, he was one of the best tackles in the game of football. Three-time All-Pro, two-time second-team All-Pro, one-time first-team All-Pro. Ryan Ramczyk was fantastic. He earned that contract that he got from the Saints, but there's a reason he didn't play at all this year. And so
his body broke down on him.
It did. And so you're looking at Ryan Ramczyk's future. As you mentioned, Over the Cap has a great article on this from Jason Fitzgerald, where he basically says that it clears the way for him to retire post June 1st.
Yeah,
and exactly. This was always going to happen. It's kind of a step to getting the Saints back towards cap compliance, but they still have a long way to go, as you mentioned. $50 million over the cap in 2025, which is $27 million worse than the next closest team. So, yes, Ryan Ramczyk is going to be retiring from pro football in all likelihood. And it helps the Saints.
Take a look at him today. He looks like
a
tight end. He's like a 240-pound guy today. And when he was playing with the Saints, after he signed the contract, Bobby and I got to talk to him, and he was like, I told him, man, you get paid like a left tackle. And he said, yeah, finally.
Yeah.
One of our right tackles, he said, get paid like a left tackle. And then, God giveth and he taketh away too, because he was as good a right tackle as there was in the NFL. And then his knee just kind of you could see it deteriorating, and it affected his play. When he did play, you could tell he wasn't the same guy. And, man, you feel for him. Because at his age, he could still play if it wasn't for the knee. But that's what – you don't leave this game on your terms.
He's 30,
you leave
Mike.
It on somebody else's terms. 30-year-old?
Yeah.
Man, some of the top tackles in this league are
30.
Trent
Williams is like 36 or like 37. He could play easily another half decade if he didn't have the knee issue. So, and, I've seen this kind of circulating on social media that – Now the final member left from that 2017 draft class is Alvin Kamara, the lone man standing.
That's it.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah, because, boy, they hung their hats on that 2017 draft class, but all of them are gone today but one, Alvin Kamara. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. Chrissy Freud will join us. She's the college and pro football writer for USA Today. Had a conversation with Drew Brees about the Saints coaching search and also about their quarterbacks. We'll have Chrissy on right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTelia along with Charlie Long. Chrissy Freud is kind of caught up at the airport. We'll try to get back with her a little bit later during the show. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, look, I wanted to bring this up. I know y'all are talking a lot about the head coaching gig for the Saints. You know, what's worrying me with that is there's so many teams looking at the same time. It's kind of like the quarterback situation. I don't think we're going to draft our way out of that scenario on the short term. But I wanted to turn things over to the Pelicans. And you know, Zion played last night. Of course, they lost, but he played pretty well. I know they're resting him tonight. Tickets are like $5 on the secondary market, Charlie. Ticket demand is very low. My question to you guys is this. A few years ago, Drew Brees was retiring, Mike, and, you know, it kind of did the whole passing of the torch, if you will, figuratively or, you know, whatever. It kind of to Zion, right? You remember that.
I sure do.
I just want to get your take on that. I know people are saying, hey, look, let's trade him. He's lazy. You can see, if you watched the game last night, how dominant he can be. Now, the question is, can he stay healthy? Is his heart in it? Is he trying to get, you know, traded out of here? You know, when I think about it, Mike and Charlie, we had Chris Paul land in our lap in the last 20 years, one of the greatest point guards in the history of the NBA. Anthony Davis, like it or not, probably going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to play for 20-something years and have all kinds of numbers. And we have Zion fall in our lap. Three guys that, you know, and I'm not saying Zion's Hall of Fame talent, but he's a freak of nature. But to have three guys this level fall in our lap, we've already fumbled away two of them. I hate for us to go down that road. And, you know, the Anthony Davis trade worked out on paper. We got the Herb Jones pick out of that trade with the Lakers. But Brandon Ingram might walk now. So I guess I bring that up, Mike and Charlie, because, and look, we were lucky in that trade. Typically, you might get half the value on a star player. So what's your take on how things have transpired the last few years as far as taking over that torch and the leader, the sports figure of the city? And is it too late, or do you think there's still something left possibly for Zion here?
No, he hasn't taken that torch.
No.
From Drew Brees? No.
I refer to Nick Friedell, one of our favorites, Odyssey NBA insider, who I think we'll be getting on tomorrow, which I'm
really
excited.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Nick made a great point. Just, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And it feels like it's been that way with Zion for quite some time. And look, like, yes, it was awesome to see him back on the court last night. The windmill dunk, 360 dunk that he pulled off against Minnesota. You're like, you see the flashes, right? But can he stay on the floor? And he's not playing tonight. And they're being extra careful with him because they don't want him to re-aggravate this, you know, hamstring issue that's just been bugging him and bugging him and bugging him year after year after year. So, Jimmy, to answer your question, no, he is not taking
up the torch
at all. Mike, you and I agree with that 100%.
But I ain't giving him away.
I'm not giving him away either. I think by the trade deadline, when we talked with, I think it was Chris Dodson, who told us this, he's just like, by the trade deadline, it is significantly more likely that Brandon Ingram is the one that's moved than Zion Williamson. And you should move Brandon Ingram at this point. Because if you don't, as you mentioned, Jimmy, you're going to let him walk for nothing. And that is the one thing you cannot do as a small market team. Just can't do it.
You've got him. Okay, you got Zion long term. Contract.
You have him locked on for at least the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, so I'm not giving him away.
No.
Go to the Red Cross if you want to give away stuff.
Because if you move him at this point with all of his injury history and all of the, you know, the question marks about him, then you're going to get pennies on the dollar. And you're going to get probably pennies on the dollar for Brandon Ingram, but at least you get something for him instead of letting him walk in the offseason. So Zion's a different case. He's under contract. He's going to be here for the next couple of years. You just got to hope it gets better.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Zach Nagy, who's the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. We kind of moved him up in the lineup. Zach, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Bob and I were talking about this Monday. The one take we got from the Texas Bowl was how well the young kids played up front, offensive line. Man, if you'd have told me that before the game, I would have never believed you. They did a really good job. Now, I will say this, Baylor, they're not loaded with talent on the defensive side of the football, but they really held up well in pass protection, and they had some pretty good holes for the running backs to run through. That was the one real positive take I take from that, because we knew a lot about Tre'Davious Green and him catching the football. Chris Hilton late in the year showed us the flash that we also saw in the Texas Bowl. We didn't know anything about these young guys up front along that offensive line. Man, they played damn well.
Yeah, no, first of all, Mike, appreciate you for having me on as always. And what you've always told me is that your second unit on the offensive line has to be just as good as the first. And for me, you saw that group kind of take strides in the right direction there. Whether it was Tyree Adams, you saw some Cohen Echols, Bordelon. You saw some action in there with the second team that ultimately did have to start in the bowl game because of all the NFL draft entrants. So obviously I was pleasantly surprised with that unit. Fast forward to the 2025 season, and you kind of have a nice mix coming in, don't you now? You have a lot of youngsters that can take that next step. You bring in some savvy veterans like Josh Thompson, Braylon Moore, maybe another offensive lineman. So in the trenches, you're looking like you're going to be in a really good spot with a mix of some youngsters, some veterans, some guys that are going to take that next step, and some guys that really showed out in the Texas Bowl. I was very impressed with Tyree Adams on that left side.
One of the things, too, is, as you brought up, two guys that are veterans, one that will play center. I'm not sure about the Northwestern guy because I've seen him play both right tackle and right guard. I know he's a right-handed guy. That's where he'll play. He'll play as a strong side guy and maybe interior. I think they're still looking for one guy that can play tackle. One more guy. And a lot of people thought it might have been Pritchard from Alabama, but it looks as though maybe the Cornhuskers threw quite a bit of money at him and looks as though he's trending toward Nebraska.
Yeah, and you're absolutely spot on there. You got Braylon Moore to take on that center spot. You got Josh Thompson, who to me, and you it sounds like, is an interior offensive lineman, a guy who can play on the inside. If we're going to go from left to right here, you got Tyree Adams. You got DJ Chester slotting to his natural spot of guard at that left guard spot. Braylon Moore at the center. Josh Thompson at right guard. And then you're going to sit back and wonder, what do they do with that right tackle spot? Do you throw Weston Davis in the mix? Do you throw in another youngster? Or do you go out in the portal and try to find a savvy veteran? And to me, it seems like the portal could be the best way to go. You're spot on with Elijah Pritchett, the Alabama transfer. There was some buzz that he was going to try to make his way in town for a visit. Ultimately checked in with Nebraska. They kind of answered all the questions that he had, and he committed and shut things down with them. So now you're kind of back to the drawing board to see if you want to take another offensive lineman. You got some time here, but nonetheless, they are going to try to see what they can do in that spot.
Zach, I remember the last time we had you on, you kind of talked about the two positions that need to get bolstered in the portal were offensive line and safety. Offensive line, it seems like they've kind of attacked a little bit, but safety, it feels kind of the next spot that they need to really address. And I know that you've been reporting on some DBs that have come in for some visits. So what's kind of the latest on all of that?
Yeah, so when it comes to the defensive backfield right now, you've retooled that cornerback spot in a really good way. I feel very comfortable in that room, as do a lot of people internally. And then you switch gears to that safety room, and you're razor thin. I mean, Charlie, you got Jarden Gilbert. You got Deshaun Spears, Javion Toviano, Joel Rogers. Those are the four pieces that you're really working with in there. You can throw in Austin Osberry as well. Those are five players right there, but there's a lack of competition, a lack of true talent level there. So fast forward to the portal. You try to get some guys in that area. Earlier this week, they hosted Keontae Scott, an Auburn transfer defensive back who's kind of benefiting from that Diego Pavia ruling that's allowing guys who play JUCO ball to get an extra year of eligibility. He spent 2 years at the JUCO level, 3 years at Auburn, and now he's got an extra year of eligibility. He got to campus for a visit. He was in for 2 days. Seems like it was a beneficial visit for both parties. They went and got some food, kind of went around campus, sat down with the staff, had those one-on-one meetings. Things went well there. We'll see what ultimately happens down the stretch. And then within the next 24 hours, you're going to bring North Carolina State defensive back to Marcus Cooley to town. That's the big fish. That's a top five safety in the portal, one of the top 10 available guys in the portal right now. He'll be in town for a visit to Baton Rouge. We'll see how things trend in that direction there, but this is a coveted player right now. He's visited Ole Miss. He'll get LSU under his belt. He's also got Missouri, Kentucky visits lined up as well. So we'll see what he ultimately does within his process before he ultimately shuts things down. LSU will get him in town, and that's a coveted guy, and they like him at the safety role. So we'll see what happens there, but
Those are the two defensive backs that are on their big board right now, in Keontae Scott and Demarcus Cooley.
Zach, you wrote this morning, 13 freshmen, midterm guys, you'll get to play in the spring. The thing that jumped out at me, we knew about DJ Pickett and Harlan Berry. Having J.D. LaFleur come in early, I think is big, too, because there's a spot there for him. As a spotted tight end, because we know Coach Kelly wants to play multiple tight ends. But it's offensive line when you got Solomon Thomas, Tyler Miller, Brent Bordelon, Carius Kern, all coming in the spring. People say, oh, they can't help you. All I know is Emory Jones and Will Campbell were freshmen and played. Now, not every guy that you bring in is going to be one of those two guys, but it does go to show you, and I see it a lot more in college football today than ever before, teams saying, you know what, our best shot is the freshman, the 18, 19-year-old young man. Put him in there. Because if we redshirt him and he plays, we're not going to have him for too long if he's really good. Because those tackles today are so coveted by the National Football League. I think that's the story of Thomas, Kern, Miller, and Bordelon coming in midterm.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Mike. And I love what you said about J.D. LaFleur, first of all. This is a true blocking tight end that can come in and enter the mix in a big way. He's a blocking guy, put his hand in the dirt, 6'4", 250. Just a unit of an 18-year-old that can step in and make an impact during spring ball. So I'm glad you addressed that. And then obviously switch gears to the offensive line. And Carius Kern's a dude. This is a guy who can really step in and enter the mix on day one once he steps on campus. And Brian Kelly alluded to that on National Signing Day, just talking about from a physical standpoint, physicality standpoint even. This is a guy who's SEC ready. So I have high hopes for a guy like Carius Kern to step in as well. Obviously, five-star Solomon Thomas was a late addition to this 2025 signing class. You got some guys that are going to enter the mix come spring ball. It's going to be a competitive group for Brad Davis in the trenches, and it's imperative to get these guys to campus. You sign four offensive linemen, and you get all four of them to campus a semester early, get acclimated to a college regime, get acclimated to spring ball, carry that momentum into the summer, then you go into fall camp, and you're really going to have the juices flow, and you're really going to have a competitive group over there. Like I said before, that mix between youngsters and veterans that are coming in through the portal, I really feel very confident in what they're doing in the trenches, considering you're losing four starters in Will Campbell, Emory Jones, Garrett Dellinger, and Miles Frazier.
The other guy, too, I threw in there, Brent Bordelon. Man, he's a man out there. He's kind of built like his pop. Ben Bordelon, who was, man, he was a really good football player at LSU. He's bigger than Bo. And I think he's an interior player. I think he's either going to be a center or a guard for LSU. But, man, he's built like a 23-year-old. If you walk up to him, he is a big man. And I think he may be able to see some playing time as a freshman.
He is. And you know what? You talked about his pops, and I think it's fantastic. It's fantastic. There's some legacy players in this signing class. You got J.D. LaFleur. Yeah. He's a legacy. Brett Bordelon, he's a legacy. I think it's great. It helps build a culture. And Brett, like you alluded to, that's a big boy. Seeing him on the sidelines pregame, that's a big guy. And if all things can go accordingly, I really do expect him to get some playing time sooner rather than later. But Brad Davis is a mastermind of a recruiter. We've seen that time and time again. He got four blue chippers to campus already. I love what he's doing in the trenches right now for the long haul. And obviously it starts with players like Carius Kern, Solomon Thomas, Tyler Miller, and of course, like you said, Brett Bordelon.
Zach, going back to the tight end position that Mike kind of brought up earlier, I remember when we were talking with, you know, about kind of the expected players that left LSU into the portal, maybe one of the more unexpected ones was Kamorian Pempton. I mean, you still bring back Tre'Davious Green and you added Sharp from the portal, and we also talked about, you know, the freshmen that are coming in too, but you also have, you've been reporting on an expected visit from Donovan Green from Texas A&M as well, so what's the latest on that?
Yeah, Donovan Green's a player who's a unique one. For me, in 2022, he was a freshman All-American, played a big-time role for A&M in year one with the program. Fast forward to 2023 of his second year, and he suffered a torn ACL. Now we move into 2024, and he didn't quite get the playing time that he would have expected. So it's a head-scratcher for sure, considering you got Bauer Sharp, you got Tre'Davious Green, you got J.D. LaFleur. Where does he come in to get some immediate playing time? And I think it's a matter of him wanting a fresh start, a change of scenery, potentially see what can happen there. LSU's recruiting him, West Virginia, Indiana. You got some heavy hitters that are pushing for him. LSU's going to bring him in for a visit on Friday. He'll be in for 2 days on Friday and Saturday. We'll see what the buzz is after that visit. We'll see if LSU can make up some ground there. They're not pressed for a tight end right now, obviously, considering you've got some pieces there. Certainly, I'd like them to bring in a blocking tight end, of course, but I don't make the big bucks like they do. But nonetheless, you go out and you bring him in for a visit just to check things out, and we'll see what happens come Saturday evening once he departs campus. But it's nice to get an SEC transfer in town, of course.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, bud. I know we had to kind of move things around, but, man, always you do a great job. And think a lot of you, but, man, keep up the great work.
Thanks, Zach.
Appreciate you, Mike. Appreciate you, Charlie. You have a good one. Thank you.
All righty. Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. You can follow him at ZNagy20 on X. We'll be back. Chrissy Freud's ready to join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, we have on with us Chrissy Freud. Chrissy takes care of things, college full and also pro football for the USA Today. And Chrissy, thanks so much for joining us. I hope the flight, everything went well with it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's been pretty hectic with the weather and everything. I was kind of shocked, though, because, I mean, all the weather reports came out that everything was going to be fine. And I'm wondering, I mean, I'm over here by Atlanta and everything seems to be fine. It said it was canceled due to operational issues. So I'm wondering if that's the plane or the weather at this point. But certainly, I finally got it fixed apparently like 5 minutes ago. So hopefully nothing else goes wrong. And for now, the Cotton Bowl is still on for me. I did not expect to receive that today, about an hour before I was supposed to go on with you guys.
Thanks so much. You got a chance to talk to Drew Brees yesterday about the head coaching spot. And you wrote about the fact that his endorsement went to Aaron Glenn, a guy that he played with the Saints. And if anything on the resume for Aaron Glenn, I'd put what happened Sunday night with a depleted defensive team, what they did to the Vikings. So tell us a little bit about Drew's comments about Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, he just talked about kind of the way that he's very much for the players, just as much as he values what he does scheme-wise and the staff he can create. It's the way that he's able to connect to these guys is kind of what he said. And he kind of said, I mean, the Saints, obviously, whenever they change over and what's going to happen during the offseason, there's a lot of things to rebuild. And I think that what he looks at the most is who can rebuild the best. And he puts his trust, it seems to be, in Aaron Glenn. And he also said, I mean, not just that he's great with interacting with players, but he's an exceptional teacher. And that he thinks that it's going to accentuate what New Orleans currently has in the locker room with the talent. I mean, that was one thing that Drew kind of went into, is that he thinks he kind of took the approach that a lot of the issues the Saints had were related to injury rather than talent and things of that nature and coaching, which he didn't really mention. And, you know, among the fan base, a lot of people are pointing to a lot of things other than injuries. So I think it just comes down to Aaron Glenn's experience with the Saints, his connection to the Saints, and then also the success that he's had elsewhere. I mean, he's going to be hotly pursued by at least three teams that I've seen so far. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets him, but there's no question he's going somewhere.
Yeah, he's going to have some opportunities a couple different places. Did he bring up what he thought would happen 2025 is from a quarterback standpoint? Because for all of us, I know the fans not going to like this, but Derek Carr, I think, is going to be back. And that's, to me, there's a financial part of this that you have to understand. And there's no star quarterback in his draft class that you have to give up a lot. And you got a lot of holes on this football team. Did he talk about the quarterback situation for the Saints?
Yeah, he did talk about that. He didn't really discuss Derek Carr and his solidity there that much. But he did go into Jay Kaner and Spencer Rattler. And I think kind of the synopsis of all that is they have had their rookie growing pains from time to time, but he thinks that both of them suit the offense very well. But the other thing he mentioned that I think that we all have to take into account is what type of offense are the Saints going to run next year, because the coaching staff of the Saints is going to be largely different next year. So it's going to be curious to see kind of the adjustments that they make. But he basically said that he thinks that both of them have a lot of special qualities and unique traits, and that he thinks that they made the most of their opportunity, which is code for, I don't want to tell you what I think.
I got you. I know exactly where you're going.
To a certain extent, but I think that he appreciates some of the things that those guys have done. And we have to consider, as frustrating as it is for the fan base, just the circumstances. Neither of these guys have a significant amount of in-game reps, and both of them were thrown into the fire with no notice whenever they took the field. So, I mean, you have to be ready whenever your name is called upon, but it was the most unideal of unideal situations, and it happened twice in that season, and then they didn't consistently stick with one guy. They kind of went back and forth before going over to Spencer Rattler, and so I think they were up against a lot more adversity than people might take into account. I mean, as cliche as that sounds, I think that just getting into the head of a rookie quarterback or a quarterback without a lot of in-game reps, it's a lot more difficult than people would like to think.
Chrissy, I'll get your opinion on this, because I think with Aaron Glenn, he's going to get a spot. The big horror for him is going to be how that offense is run. Because, okay, you don't know both sides of the football. You're either a defensive-oriented guy or an offensive-oriented guy. And he is. He certainly, as a player, as a coach, has been on the defensive side of the football. I think the big horror for him would be who runs his offense, who's going to be his quarterback coach. And I thought about that when Teddy Bridgewater says, you know what, I'm going to give up high school coaching, and I'm going to go coach with the Lions. And I would wonder a little bit, because there's some connections there with Teddy. Would he think about bringing in Teddy Bridgewater as, I don't know if his OC, but quarterback coach, passing game coordinator? He's played in this league, and it's not like, you know, because in today's world, a lot of these players are, man, what? You telling me to do that? You ain't never played in this game before. You can't tell that to Teddy Bridgewater, Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see who he decides to bring over. But based on what Drew Brees said, he told me that if he could pick someone, since the Saints have had kind of a habit of hiring within, he says that in recent history, he said he wants Clint Kubiak. So, okay. I mean, if they take somebody from within, he would be trusting of Clint Kubiak all the way up to the head coaching position. So I think from at least the eyes of Drew Brees, that the offensive coordinator, they should absolutely retain him. I mean, he really likes what he did in his first game. His first year with the team, he said that he really liked the shifts, the movement, the run game scheme, and then the play action that came off of that. So I think he wants to see the Saints continue to do all of those things. And I mean, it was very polarizing, because I released that as well from our interview. Very polarizing, because the first two, but really when you step back, Drew Brees has a really fantastic argument here, even though a lot of people don't like Clint Kubiak because of the way that the rest of the season went. But the first two games of the season is as healthy as the team was. And it's really important to go back just through the timeline of injury, because it's even more extensive. I feel like people have kind of forgotten about how much it's really affected the team. But they put two back-to-back just awesome offensive performances together, combining for 91 points over those first two games. And so you kind of ask yourself, there were some other factors that went into it, but if the team had stayed fully healthy, could they have continued that consistently under Clint Kubiak? And then also just his first year. So what can he do in his second year? So I think there should be a case made, and Drew Brees would obviously agree, that maybe Clint Kubiak should be retained in some capacity.
Chrissy, before we let you run, you mentioned the Cotton Bowl. I just wanted to ask you about it, because Ohio State versus Texas in Arlington, it's very, very exciting. I can't wait for it this Friday. And what have you seen from Ohio State so far? Mike and I have talked a little bit about it. Where they just basically demoed Tennessee and then Oregon back-to-back. I mean, can anyone stop this Buckeyes team at this point?
I want to see how Texas covers Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, I don't know
good
if anyone
ruck.
Really can. Yeah,
good ruck.
I think that Jeremiah Smith, it's early, but he looks like a generational talent.
Yes, he does.
It's the way that he's, I mean, it seems like every single time that I watch an Ohio State game, he's broken one record or another. You can hardly believe that he's really just a freshman. And I think that that's by far their most key and dominant player. And then Will Howard has had several explosive performances as well. And Texas's secondary has been pretty good, but I mean, it's also been suspect at times. And so if Will Howard and the Ohio State Buckeyes can get things going through the passing game with Jeremiah Smith, and Texas can't keep up and can't cover him, I think it's going to really spell demise for them.
Chrissy, thanks so much for joining us. I know everything was kind of working in different directions. Good luck. I hope all travels are good for you.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Bye.
Appreciate it. Chrissy Freud, who covers both college football and the NFL for USA Today, had that interview with Drew Brees, and she gave basically Drew told her about what he thinks about quarterback position, also who he would pick, and that would be Aaron Glenn as head coach. We'll be back to finish it off here on our number one of sports talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Want to thank Zach Nagy and Chrissy Freud for joining us this afternoon, covering both LSU, college football, the NFL. Hey, when we come back, be trusty. Hold on. I'll go right to you. I know you want to talk about Cliff Kingsbury as a possible candidate as head coach of the Saints. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. And at 520, we'll be joined by Brad Evans from BetMGM tonight. He's our Odyssey Sports BetQL insider, giving us his takes on the college football playoffs and also the playoffs in the NFL. I know he's been holding on a long time, so we got to get him on Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Be trusty. Be trusty. In the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
What's going on, man? Happy
All right.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you, man.
Hey, so I was, you know, looking, and I noticed that the Saints have asked for permission to speak with Cliff Kingsbury, and I found that intriguing because I know his specialty is quarterbacks, and particularly young quarterbacks. I know he coached Baker Mayfield and Mahomes in college. Yep. He had Kyler Murray when he was first drafted, and the work he did with Jaden Daniels, where he'll be the presumptive offensive rookie of the year, was intriguing, especially since we have a young quarterback on our roster. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
I would have a lot of interest in Cliff. He was on a dysfunctional team out in Arizona. Man, front office there. They weren't giving him a lot of help. He's a very fertile offensive mind coach. I would want him to explain to me who he's going to hire to run his defense. And I think that will be a key for him because, you know, he's offensive side to football. Here's the crazy thing, B. Trusty. Somebody sent me this about a month ago. In 2004, the Saints gave Cliff Kingsbury to Buddy DiLiberto and I on a second guest show. Cliff Kingsbury was on the practice squad for the Saints that year, and he was our guest for the Saints. But, man, Cliff, he knows the passing game very well. You see what's happened out in Washington and how he's been able to use the running game. They run the football really well with the Commanders. He's going to get another shot as being a head coach. A lot of people sort of connect the dots that if Ben Johnson doesn't take the Bears job because of his tie-in with Caleb Williams at USC, that Cliff would go there. But I would want to interview him, and I want him to tell me who you're going to hire on defense. I know about your offense, and I know what you're going to do that place, but I want to figure out what you're going to do defensively. But Cliff, he had a short stint with the Saints. I think it was 04, 05, maybe a little bit. But I know 04 for sure because somebody actually sent me that picture that they took with Buddy, myself, and Cliff Kingsbury. Man, he looks a lot better today. He's aged pretty well as far as that's concerned. And he does do a good job with quarterbacks. I will say that. He does a nice job in the pitch-catch part of the game, but he has always talked about you need a running game to balance that. And you see it with the Commanders this
right.
year.
And, I mean, he's been ultra-successful with Jaden Daniels and the Commanders this year, similar to what he kind of did with Kyler Murray. I mean, the offense, no one's going to question him as a play caller or an OC, but he hasn't really had the success as a head coach. He will likely get another opportunity here. And Mike, betonline.ag's got the new updated odds. I remember yesterday we talked about this, that Kingsbury was initially the favorite for the Bears job, and we talked about his connection with Caleb Williams dating back to when he was a senior offensive analyst with USC last year. But now it's Ben Johnson at 1-1. We'll see kind of how that develops. It's going to change day by day, but Cliff Kingsbury is still number two there. Cliff Kingsbury also kind of up in the running for the Vegas job as well, which you imagine if Vegas trades up to get Shedeur Sanders, get kind of an offensive-minded guy to help him along early on.
You can see the connect the dots here.
Yes.
And, you know, I thought if the Titans made a move at head coach, which they haven't, Brian Callahan is still the head coach there. My first thought was that's where maybe Cliff would go because you got the first pick in the draft.
I think, and you know, the one and dones have already been kind of crazy this year with Jerod Mayo and obviously Antonio Pierce. But if you're the Titans, I mean, what's really the point to keeping Callahan?
No idea.
annoying. That's my question, is that, you know, the timeline, and we talked about this yesterday, Mike, the timeline for the Titans has been very strange, where, you know, you move on from Vrabel after you had already moved on from John Robinson and brought in Rand Carthon, but then you move on from Rand Carthon a year after you move on from Vrabel. It's just, what were you thinking? What was the plan here? So now you have Callahan in, but you're having to add a new GM as well. It's just a mess in Tennessee.
Yeah, it is.
And so,
You know what, Amy Sistrunk is in charge there, Bud Adams' daughter, and it's her call here on what she wants to do. And listen, I've said this many times, it's hard to tell a billionaire what to do. And who's got their ear telling them what to do? It's hard to convince them of something if they don't want to listen, because they do have that money and they do have a lot of power with it. Charlie, what's interesting was coming out of Chicago, because I always thought there were two college coaches that would get long looks from the NFL if they wanted NFL jobs. One is Dan Lanning at Oregon. I think Dan would be a guy, if he wanted a job, he
can
could
I,
get
can
one
I guess
kid.
The second one?
Matt Campbell.
Oh.
From Iowa State.
Okay, never
and
mind.
Brad Biggs, he's covered the Bears for the Chicago Tribune. It's well over 20 years. He is reporting that Iowa State coach Matt Campbell is expected to interview for the Chicago Bears job.
Matt Campbell, huh?
And a lot of people in this league really think a lot of Matt Campbell as a coach. They think that he could translate into being a very good pro coach.
So this was a quote from Ryan Poles earlier, Mike. He said, quote, "There's going to be some names that you don't expect that are going to surprise you because we've been digging deeper than we ever have before on the Bears head coaching search." So yes, Ben Johnson's currently the lead candidate, but we'll see kind of what they do, because the Bears could potentially throw a curveball here. And Kyle Brandt he does Good Morning Football, had posted, "I'm telling you, they're going to hire someone surprising," quote unquote surprising.
That Matt Campbell is not the name right off the bat you would think of. But man, Matt, and I've got to meet him a few times. I can't say I know him, but boy, he's a sharp guy, very intelligent coach, and can really get his point across well. And he's winning at Iowa State.
Yeah. Okay. No, he's done a great job there.
I think he's done a fantastic job there, and he may, if he wants it, he may well be in line for an NFL head coaching job.
Yeah, Dan Lanning is the most obvious one to potentially make the
and
jump from college.
And he has talked about it, Charlie. I'm telling you.
And he's young.
And he's talked about it to different people that I know, that I would like to coach in the NFL one day. He didn't say today, but one day he wants to coach in the NFL.
Yeah, man, he had a great year with that Oregon team that kind of fumbled in the playoffs. So to
and
speak,
they got caught in the buzz.
They got smoked by Ohio State in the Rose Bowl this past
They couldn't
week.
Get their hand away from the blade quick enough. Be trusty, thanks for the call. But I do think Cliff Kingsbury is going to get another shot. I do believe that. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And Brad Evans from BetMGM tonight will join us, talking about all the games this coming weekend and also tomorrow and Friday in college football. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line is the host of BetMGM Tonight and Odyssey Sports BetQL Insider, Brad Evans. BetQL Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all of the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the BetMGM Tonight podcast for more analysis. Just search BetMGM Tonight wherever you find your podcast. Brad, great to hear your voice again. Welcome to WWL.
Hola, amigos. Thanks for having me back.
Brad, we'll get to it real quick. The college football world, man, Notre Dame, Penn State in the Orange Bowl. Man, a lot of people here are saying, you know what the best bet is? Take the under. Because these defenses are really good. Your thoughts on Notre Dame, Penn State, and man, it's basically what a pick 'em game now with Penn State.
It's actually 1.5 currently. Okay. Notre Dame is laying that chalk at BetMGM. The total has come down. I grabbed it immediately because I agree with the consensus. I bet heavily in the under at 46.5. It's down at 44.5, and I still would take the under. I think this game is going to be somewhere in the teens, probably well below 20, maybe for both teams. They're the bitter end. Just through the upstanding defenses that both possess. Notre Dame entering the game on the season. Number two, when EPA per play defense, and Penn State at number seven in that category. So I think the Fighting Irish are going to squeak this thing out. I have them in the national title. I have them win the whole shebang at 8-1 odds before the playoffs kicked it off. So I got to stick to my guns on that fearless forecast. But
Brad, I do remember you telling me that a couple weeks back. I do remember that you picked Notre Dame to win it all.
Well, we'll see if it actually comes to fruition. But, you know, we're halfway there. I got two more steps to go. But, like Notre Dame to win this thing, march on the national title game, and I very much do side with Joe Public, betting heavily there on the under.
Ohio State, Texas, man, and just visually. You saw what Ohio State's done the last couple games. It's like, man, I thought this line would be a lot higher, Brad. Texas has been schizophrenic all over the board. Now, you might catch them. They play well. Man, I just want to see how Texas guards Amika Buga and, Jeremiah Smith. And I think it all boils down to Will Howard. It all is going to boil down to Will and how he plays, but he's got a couple receivers, and that running game is really smoking for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, indeed. Look, and I'm going to lay it with Ohio State. I know it's up to six now. It opened at -5.5, and I'm still not deterred by the half of a point movement. They are bar none the most talented team, probably remaining in the entire college football playoff field. They're number one on the season EPA per play offense, and number one as well in EPA per play defense. You look at Texas, Ewers can be touch and go at times, and you're right about Will Howard. If he plays anywhere near what he showed in the Rose Bowl against Oregon, they're going to win and probably win in convincing fashion. So I like Ohio State. I'll lay the chalk, and I also like the under. I think the total's way too high at 53.5, knowing just how stiff and stout both these defenses are. Texas, number three in the country in EPA per play defense, as I mentioned. Ohio State set the pace in that category.
Brad, looking to the NFL wildcard round, one of these lines that really kind of confuses me a little bit is just because divisional rivals, the Steelers at the Ravens, which will be Saturday night on Amazon, 9.5-point favorites for Baltimore at home in this game. And just looking at their matchups earlier this year, they split. The Steelers won by 2, and then the Ravens won by 17. And I think it's a little bit, the public is kind of looking at the Steelers entering this game on a 4-game losing skid. The Ravens are kind of flying high on a 4-game winning streak.
That's why the line is what it is.
The line just feels a little bit high, though, Brad. I'm not sure. Can you kind of convince me to take the Ravens in this one?
I can convince you to take the Ravens. They're born a better team. Period, end of story. I mean, you look at Baltimore and some of the advanced data that's out there. The biggest eyesore they had for the first, 10 weeks of the season was on the back end defensively. They entered this matchup over the last 6 weeks, number two in the NFL, in drop back EPA pass defense. So, they're a team that is definitely tied to screws, right at the ship on the back end, and it has a lot to do with the fact that they've shifted Marlon Humphrey out of the slot, working him more outside. And, that simple alteration has really unlocked the potential of the secondary. You know how stiff and stout that front line is. They can really bottle up the run, and that is a calling card right now. The Pittsburgh Steelers, that 1-2 punch, and Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. But, what version of Russell Wilson are we going to get? Will George Pickens actually, apply some stick him in the hands and catch some of the passes thrown in his general direction after the three drops that in the last game? And you look at how broken the Steelers are offensively, number 30 in EPA per play offense over the last 5 weeks. There's one direction and one direction to go, and that is Baltimore laying the chalk. I think they're going to win by 15 or more.
One of the games that's, I think, for me, the most interesting, Commanders Bucks.
Oh, yeah.
And, because you see that Jaden is an unbelievable talent, but the one thing I see with the Bucks, they don't put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. I know that there's been a really big hit on home teams in this round of the playoffs. People bet a lot on the home teams in the first round. Yep. But Commanders, Bucks, that might be a thing I got to think a lot about, because I think if there's a team that could win it on the road, I think it's Washington.
Yeah, well, look, this is a coin flip game. It really is. Now, I like Tampa because of a lot of the similar reasons. I talked about the Buffalo, or Baltimore secondary, and how they've really tightened up on the back end defensively. You know, that was a team that was extremely susceptible to big pass plays and chunk gains through the vertical attack of the opposition earlier this season. But Tampa, over the last 5 weeks, they're number four in the NFL in EPA per play defense, and they're also top five in dropback EPA defense. So, you know, that eyesore has been healed, so to speak. You got Vita Vea up front, who just is a man-eater there in the trenches. I like the construct defensively and what they are trotting out right now. And then offensively, it's been absolute juggernaut. I mean, Baker Mayfield, Baker, the touchdown maker, has been throwing frozen ropes all over the field. A lot of those going to Jalen McMillan, who scored a touchdown now in five straight games. My cousin, Mike Evans, still getting it done. $3 million richer as well, based on the threshold that he hit last week. Bucky Irving has brought an entire new wrinkle to the offense, getting it done on the ground, and also spectacular in the checkdown game. I think Tampa's has got too many weapons. I think Washington's going to compete, but I'll take the Buccaneers and lay the three.
Packers, Eagles, and, you know, I thought early in the season, it certainly, the Lions were clear-cut, the most talented team in the National Football League, but injuries have sort of whittled them down a little bit. I think Eagles could make a case from a talent standpoint. Now, here's the negative with that. They got Nick Sirianni as head coach. You trust him in these type situations. So your thoughts, Eagles, Packers, and the Packers are kind of coming into this game a little bit beat up.
Yeah, they are, and I think a lot of people are gravitating to that narrative and laying some heavy action right now on Philadelphia, minus just a 4.5. But I see this game being a 3 to 4 point margin.
Yeah,
I think Captain Hook is going to come into the equation here. So if I had a lean, it's going to be on Green Bay plus the 4.5. Now, Saquon is an absolute master blaster right now in the trenches. Get it done and flexing those sexy quads all over the field. You know, I like the over on his rush yards prop, which is set at 100.5. I think he's going to run for a minimum 110, 115, probably salting the clock away late. But I think Green Bay is going to stay within striking distance. They're going to find a way to cover in this game. So as an ardent Bears supporter, I should hate the Packers and fade the living daylights out of them. But speaking objectively, I'm back in Green Bay plus the 4.5.
And then looking at the final game of Wild Card Weekend here, Brad, the pick'em game between the Vikings and the Rams, it's literally a 1-point spread for Minnesota on the road in this matchup. You know, they played on, I think, a Thursday night game earlier on in the season. It's when LA was still kind of in the dumps, and that win for LA started to kind of turn their season around. Now, you know, Minnesota still had a fantastic year. They fell short of the one seed by one game in the regular season finale. What's your thoughts on this matchup? Do you have a side that you're playing? Or are you looking at the over-under set at 48, anything like that?
Yeah, I love the Rammies on this one. I'm going to take them on the plus one. I think this line could actually sway the other direction by kickoff. I think the Rams could be favored by a point and a half when it's all said and done. Pretty balanced team, L.A. right now. Now, the back end defensively, that is an area of concern, especially when you're going against that dynamic passing attack, of course, spearheaded by the unreal Justin Jefferson. But Jordan Addison has had his moments. Jalen Naylor has really come on strong here last couple of weeks. They got a lot of dudes. TJ Hockenson as well. And catch a ton of passes and really work that secondary down the field. But that same story applies to the L.A. Rams. And the Vikings entering the week on the season, they've given up the second most yards to the wide receiver position. And you get that dynamic duo of Puka Nacua and also Cooper Kupp. I think at a minimum, Nacua is going to crush the over on his 87.5 receiving yards prop. It's my favorite prop in this game. And I do feel the Rams will survive in advance, win by probably a field goal boot in the end. I don't feel strong either side ledger there on the total. But, yeah, give me L.A. Plus the one, and definitely give the over on Nacua receiving yards.
Brad, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Always appreciate your insights, and you break it down super. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Brad.
Muchas gracias, amigos. Enjoy the action.
Thank you, Brad. That was the host of BetMGM Tonight and Odyssey Sports. BetQL Insider Brad Evans. BetQL Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all of the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. We come back, pick six, myself along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. I think Hebert got his picks in. So
he's got them in.
We'll be back with all those picks right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettey along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and it's our pick six segment. So, Charlie, I'm going to throw it to you.
Last week is incomplete, gentlemen. We still have the two college football playoff matchups, the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, to be decided tomorrow and Friday. However, our NFL picks, no bueno. No bueno, gentlemen. I went 1-3 in NFL picks. The Lions saved me, thankfully. Mike, 0-4. Bobby, 0-4. Steve, 1-3. Woof.
Yikes.
Yeah, no, the Cincinnati Bengals, 2.5. The half point really hooked us.
I'll be damned.
The Falcons obviously did not work out. That defense for Atlanta is pooty. The Buccaneers did not work out either. The Lions saved me and Steve in the end. The Vikings did not save you or Bobby, Mike. So we still have to figure out what's going to happen. Just rehashing the Orange Bowl picks. I have Notre Dame. Mike, you have Notre Dame. Bobby's got Penn State. Steve, you got Notre Dame as well. And for the Cotton Bowl on Friday, all of us have Ohio State, -6, which makes sense. They look like the best team in college football. So we're going to do... I don't have the records complete just yet because we'll wait on those two games, but we'll do the NFL wildcard round picks right now, guys. I got Bobby's picks ready to go. We're going to start off, go chronological order, starting Saturday, January 11th. In the AFC, the 5-seeded Chargers, 2.5-point favorites at the 4-seeded Texans. That line's moved up to 3, but when I did this, it was 2.5, so we do have the half point to go with. Bobby's got the Chargers, and I agree with him. What do you guys got?
Me too. Chargers.
Yeah, I'm going with the Bolts as well, gentlemen. That's not a good sign here. Just don't like the way the Texans really have been playing this entire season. They did make the postseason, obviously, but haven't been impressed with what we've been seeing, and I just like the way Harbaugh's got these Chargers rolling right now. So give me Herbert and the Bolts.
And it doesn't really matter because if we get a push, I give us a win. But the half point is very nice to work with here. If the Chargers win by 3, then that win's clean. Moving on, guys. This is the game that I asked Brad Evans about. I was a little bit intrigued by it. The Steelers, the 6-seed in the AFC at the 3-seeded Ravens, also Saturday night. Baltimore, 9.5-point favorites at home over their divisional rival. Bobby's got the Steelers, and I think I agree with him. I know the Ravens beat the Steelers team by 17 points just a couple weeks back. The Steelers are on a 4-game losing streak entering the postseason. But something tells me these divisional grudge matches in the postseason, I'll go with the underdog Steelers. I'm not going to pick them to win outright. But this is maybe a touchdown, if not a field goal type of game. I don't think it's a 10-point game.
I'll go with the Ravens. I just think that, I don't know about the Steelers offensively. And if they get Derrick Henry cranking, it'd be a long day. I've got to swallow this one hard, but I'm going to go with Baltimore.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm with Mike as well. I don't like that 9.5. But to me, the Ravens are the far superior squad over the Steelers. And yeah, run, Derek, run. I think they end up getting a double-digit victory. Yeah,
George Pickens looked bad in that finale against Cincinnati, guys. Like, they have to get him going if they want any shot to keep this game close. But I will take the Steelers in this one. I don't feel great about it, but I wouldn't feel great about taking the Ravens either. This is the weirdest line of the week for me by far. Moving on, guys, we got a Sunday triple header starting with the 7-seeded Broncos in the AFC at the 2-seeded Bills. This line's also moved, but currently we have the Bills -8.5 in Buffalo. Bobby's got the Bills covering that 8.5-point spread. What you got?
Yeah,
Bills.
I'm going Buffalo, too. I think they roll the Denver Broncos in this one.
They're playing with house money, though, Denver. They are playing with house money now. And you got Sean, who's been there, done that.
I want to take the Broncos. I really do.
Okay, so that's who you take?
I'll take the Broncos.
And Bo Nix, you trust.
And Bo Nix, I trust. And Sean Payton, I trust. And then that Broncos defense, I trust. Give me the Broncos to keep this relatively close. Maybe the Bills kind of push it away late, which could very well happen.
You know what I'm scared of for the Broncos?
Getting hit early?
They get hit early with the tsunami.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But I think 8.5 points, it's a little bit too much. I think a lot of these games are going to be very close, which I'm looking forward to this weekend. Broncos +8.5. I'll make that play, and I'll probably lose, but we'll see what happens. Up next, guys, we got the NFC matchups. The 7-seeded Packers at the 2-seeded Eagles, Philadelphia, 4.5-point favorites.
I'm going to take the Packers. I think the Eagles win. But I look at this game. I'm similar to Brad. I think this may be a field goal game. Man, do you trust Nick Sirianni?
Nope.
Okay, Steve, you trust him more than anybody because you're an Eagles fan. But, man, and I think the Eagles are the more talented team. Right, I really do. But, man, he's had a tendency to kind of try to mess things up on a real talented team.
For me, I'm going to go Philly. Just 4.5 for me. I don't like that Jordan Love is banged up. So fly, Eagles, fly, and I think they roll it home.
I'm taking the Packers as well, Mike. I'm with you on this one. I think they keep it close and maybe, potentially, I don't want to guarantee it by any stretch of the imagination, pull off an upset here. I will take the Packers plus 4.5. I think it's going to be a very fun matchup in the first round of the playoffs. Bobby's got the Eagles. So I don't know if I said that. So it's a split decision here. Mike, you and I got the Packers. Bobby and Steve have the Eagles. Moving on, we have the 6-seeded Commanders at the 3-seeded Buccaneers. Tampa tough. Bay, 3-point favorites at home on Sunday Night Football, guys.
And Jade Natras.
I'm right there
Commanders.
With you, man. The Commies.
Yeah, I'm leaning back and forth here, but I'm going to go with the home squad, the Buccaneers, given the 3, and I'll trust Baker Mayfield in this matchup. And Mike Evans, you know, they got a run game going there as well, too. I think Jaden will be phenomenal, but maybe the youngster, it's a little too bright for him on the playoff stage, even though he's been there, done that before. Yeah, I know. I'm like just trying to make any kind of excuse here.
I like Jaden versus that Bucs defense, guys.
They don't get a lot of pass rush.
They don't get,
saw it against the Saints.
That is, and Mike, we'll talk about it more as the NFL draft gets closer.
I'm just worried about the rusher.
Number one need on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster for the 2025 rusher. Draft is edge rusher.
Yeah, I'm worried about the Commanders' weapons, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I got the Commies plus 3. So does Bobby. Mike, you got Commanders. And Steve, you got the Buccaneers. So you're standing alone with Tampa Bay. I am making a grave error as I'm noticing while doing this, guys. I am taking all the road teams, which is very stupid of me. But, you know, it's a little bit too late to make a change there. Finally, guys, we got Monday Night Football, the 5-seeded Vikings, 1.5-point favorites at the 4-seeded Rams.
You know what? I'm a go with McVay and the Rams. I go with the home team. The Vikings secondary, I think, is where they can protect Matt Stafford. They're going to do some business. They're going to do some business there. And, again, that first game, they had a really good game plan against Minnesota.
I think this Rams squad can cause some trouble in these playoffs. You got a coach.
I wouldn't want to play them.
No, you got a coach, quarterback that's been there, done that before. And to me, I didn't like what we saw from Sam Bradford in that last game. Sam Darnold in that last game. It kind of
looked like Sam Bradford.
Yeah, he did.
Right. So, give me the Rams here at home and getting points.
Dang, I thought I was going to get one on y'all here. I feel really good about the Rams in this game, and I'll tell you why. What you saw on Sunday Night Football, and we talked with Schlereth about this yesterday, Mike, and he made a great point. The amount of pressure that they got on Sam Darnold in that game, the Detroit Lions front, what's the strength of the Rams defense? Their pressure. Defensive front. Jared Verse has been awesome. Braden Fisk has been awesome. They got all these young pieces up front. Kobe Turner getting after the passer. Give me the Rams defense to make Sam Darnold uncomfortable in this Vikings offensive line will not be able to hold up. I'm going with the Rams, and I agree with Brad. I think by the time this comes around and we get to, you know, Monday Night Football, maybe the Rams might be favored in this game. It could flip-flop. It's kind of a pick-em right now, and it's going to end up being a pick-em. But give me the Rams in this matchup. Bobby's got the Vikings, so he's standing alone with this one. Steve, Mike, myself, we all pick the Rams.
Man, that's good. If we all end up picking the same one, you know it's trouble.
You know it's going to be a screw-up. Right. But you know what's the crazy part of that? And I watched the Rams defensively, and I saw his grandpa coach, Chris Shula. Wow. Is the defensive coordinator of the L.A. Rams. Now, he gets overshadowed because of all that, you know, McVay kind of tree on offense. But the grandson of the legendary Don Shula is running the defense for the Rams.
And I'm telling you guys, that defensive front for the Rams is for real. And just based off of what we saw when Sam Darnold got pressured by the Lions defensive front, he starts missing throws, and when he misses them, he misses high. And if he throws a couple of those lollipops up and you get picked off, give the Rams offense a couple extra possessions, you know, that Rams strength, and Brad also made this great point, the Rams strength on offense, you know, those wide receivers against that secondary of the Vikings, it feels like the matchups, despite Minnesota's fantastic 14-3 year, Kevin O'Connell's going to win Coach of the Year. I'm not taking anything away from what they've done this season. It feels like this is a bad matchup for them.
You know what it reminds me a little bit of? When Bob and I made the playoffs for the first time in 87, and they got crushed by the Vikings in that opening round of the playoffs, and the Vikings were clearly the better team. And the Saints, man, you could see once it came apart, man, it came apart quick that year.
So is Chargers-Texans the only one we have all the same?
Yes.
Yeah,
because
I think so.
I'm being really dumb and picking the Broncos. But in Sean, I trust. Just keep it close, Sean. That's all I'm asking. You don't need to win. I'm not expecting you to win, but just make it like a touchdown game or something.
We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, I want to thank Brad Evans from BetMGM tonight. Always does a great job. At 6:30 tonight, right here on the Big 870 WWL, it'd be Pelicans pregame, and then at 7 o'clock, tip-off between the Pelicans and Portland. You can hear Graf make the call right here on the Big 870 WWL. We'll be back with another half hour of Sports Talk right after this news break.
I mean, I don't know what his reach is, but it's got to be Condor level.
That is four steals for Murray, 18 points, and he nearly got another one. And now Zion will poke it away.
Fly, big boy.
360.
Yes, sir.
It started with DeJounte. Zion finished it off.
Ball up top.
Oh, we've been waiting for that for 2 months.
Yes, indeed. Todd Graffinini and John DeSazer on the call. Pelicans taking on the Timberwolves last night. They lose the game 104-97, but man, oh man, it was great to see a slimmed down Zion Williamson on the court. Had a great night. Scored 22 points in his first game back since November the 6th. Unfortunately, though, Charlie, we will not be seeing him this evening. Won't be playing game two of a back-to-back against Portland this evening. But overall, was, like I said, great to see him in action again. I know the crowd was really into it. Unfortunately, the team just couldn't pull out the victory, though, in the end.
Yeah, 3-point shooting last night, Steve,
yeah,
was no good. And so
CJ disappeared, too.
Yeah, but CJ, you know, he's been kind of carrying the load offensively for a while now. So the fact that he had a poor shooting night, Antonio Daniels said it at the very end, he had an off night, and that's what happened. You know, it's not anything to be panicked over or anything like that. And CJ's been great for this team. So, you know, the 1 of 14, 1 of 7 from three last night, unfortunate. Ouch, right. And it really hurt them, obviously, in the 7-point loss to Minnesota, where, I mean, Steve, they fought back in that game. Like, they got off to a terrible start.
Awful.
Came all the way back, kind of, you know, battled throughout. And then about midway through the third quarter, this is kind of how Graf described it, that they just couldn't get enough offense to break through, right? And really kind of take control of the game. So they did make a late push, but they fall short 104-97 against Minnesota, breaking their little two-game winning streak. However, they are favorite tonight against Portland, even without Zion, Trey Murphy. DeJounte's questionable, but he's probably going to go. We're not exactly sure just yet. We haven't heard any reports about his availability for tonight. But the Pelicans are still 1.5 favorites over Portland, so you know, that's a little bit enticing.
When we got Ollie on yesterday, he got a little ahead of ourselves thinking about a 4-game win streak.
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw it kind of line up, right? If they could pick up a win with Zion's return against a good but not great Minnesota team,
yeah,
then you were staring at a potential for a 4-game winning streak because you're playing Portland, who's 12-23 right now, and I think in 12th place in the Western Conference. So Portland's not very good. Minnesota is okay. So if you could have picked up that win against Minnesota, that's when you were looking at a potential 4-game winning streak. Instead, now you're just looking to bounce back after last night's loss.
Hopefully they can do that. We got a 7 o'clock tip-off coming up on WWL AM-FM. Also, pregame coverage starting 6:30 on both stations. Zion Williamson spoke after the game, talked about his conditioning, and even was asked about not, you know, being available for back-to-back, saying basically that's up to the medical staff. They did not think it was appropriate for to put him out there, and I think they're going to be kind of cautious with him throughout the season, and maybe we don't see him necessarily in these back-to-back games throughout the year.
It's kind of the load management thing that everyone hates, and NBA fans hate, myself included, but they just don't want him to risk getting hurt on a short night back-to-back. Like when you have to play one game one night and then you turn around 24 hours later, have to play another game. That's what they're concerned that potentially that might be too much on his, you know, lower body, his hamstrings specifically. So
he's just 24 though.
I know. But I mean, the hamstring issues have bothered him.
I know
him
the history of injury,
year.
You have to be, you know, treat it with kid gloves.
It's the case of better be safe than sorry with Zion. And I understand it. I mean, I'm not happy that he's not going to be playing tonight. I know a lot of Pelicans fans aren't either. But you know, he'll play on Friday in all likelihood. So you just, I mean, you're playing a bad Portland team, and hopefully you can beat them without him. But, you know, I know everyone wanted to see him in the Smithy King Center tonight again.
Like I said, Zion spoke after the game, so let's hear from Z and what he had to say yesterday.
For you, I mean, you talked about this early in the season, but what's the key for you just staying on the court, making sure you can, you know, address some of the things that kept you off the court in the past and making sure you can kind of build on this?
Just keep learning more and more about my body, how my body reacts to certain things, working with the team and, you know, just talking it through.
There's been so many conversations while you were out about you, about the status of the team, about all these things.
What were they saying about me?
About whether or not you were up for trades, whether or not, you know, how you were attacking rehab, all those things.
What do you think about that?
What do I think about?
Like what they were saying? What were they saying? Like what they were saying about me?
If you're talking about trade speculation, I would say I think
it's whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. I would say it was premature. I said, we hadn't seen what you could do this year with this team. That's what we, I think we're all at the point, considering where the record is now, that's the main thing the rest of the way is to see how you're doing and what your future is in New Orleans.
I respect honesty. At the end of the day, you control the things you can control and accept the things you can't. As a professional, only thing I can do is come into work every day, work hard, and have fun. At the end of the day, like, get to play basketball for a living. I love hooping, so... you know, me and DeJounte talk about it a lot, not taking this for granted. So, you know, just have fun and work hard.
DeJounte said you did attack the rehab, and that's something that a lot of guys said, that you had attacked rehab. Do you feel like in this year, and you've been through rehab so many times in your short career at this point, do you feel like you approached it differently this time? Do you feel like you're in a different place? Because we talked about this before the season. You're not, you know, that's the same thing. Did you feel like now you could focus on things better, that you were more mature in how you approach basketball? Did you see that for yourself during this time away? And did you notice for yourself, hey, I'm different. I'm not the rookie I was. I'm a professional basketball player now.
Just part of growing up, like I said, just being a professional. And as far as this rehab, you know, me and the Pels, we worked really hard during this rehab. The focus I had during this rehab was a bit more extreme. That's why, like I said, my legs are already under me. I feel like I didn't even miss a beat, but gained a beat. And now it's just, I don't have to worry about trying to find a rhythm. Like I said, over the course of 3 to 5 games, just kind of there and figure out those X's and O's and just learn from it. And hopefully win some games off it.
Do you think that, you know, the rehab was more extreme and you feel like your legs are more under you now? Do you think the fact that you've attacked it in the past and you're kind of more conditioned to attacking rehab has kind of helped you be able to attack it as, quote-unquote, extreme, as you said?
The past rehabs, even though I had a re-aggravation in one of them, you know, they were good, but this one was, we just found different ways to the work. And not just kind of be stagnant. Even before I was running, the conditioning that the team had me doing was a lot, but it was always good work. And week by week, I could just feel the progression. So when I say extreme, like we put a lot of work in.
You just heard Zion Williamson after his 22.6 rebound, 4 assist, 3 steal night in his return to the Pels lineup. Unfortunately, will not be playing for the Pels tonight when they take on the Portland Trail Blazers. We're going to take a break, come back as we get ready for Pelicans pregame coverage and hear what head coach Willie Green had to say as the Birds get ready to take on the Blazers tonight at 7 right here on WWL. Be back after this.
Hey, Coach, without Zion and Trey in the game tonight, how important is it for the bench to get going and how can they do that to be that offensive boost?
Yeah, it's much of what we've discussed when we talk about the margins. You know, we want our team to go out and play disciplined, play loose, play fast. But the key is going to be the discipline part. Can we do all of those things and take care of basketball? Can we do all of those things and, you know, execute the game plan on both ends of the floor? And, you know, those are going to be the keys for us tonight.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. That's Pelicans head coach Willie Green talking about the availability of, or non-availability of, Zion Williamson this evening, and also Trey Murphy, who's dealing with an injured ankle. Good news is DeJounte Murray, who is questionable for today's game, is available tonight to take on Portland, so they won't be as shorthanded as you might have thought.
It was like a 1-2 punch last night, really, against Minnesota. It was DeJounte and Zion.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting DeJounte back, yes, he's had issues at times with the turnovers. It feels like DeJounte's really quickly become an X factor for this team. Just looking at how many turnovers he's had in their losses versus how many assists he's had in their wins.
Yeah.
Look at those back-to-back games against the Wizards, right? I mean, he went back-to-back 12 assists in both those matchups. If he's dishing out assists and limiting those turnovers, starting point guard, that's exactly what you want to see from him. I mean, the Pelicans are in good shape offensively. So that's kind of what you're hoping to see from him tonight. Hopefully CJ bounces back from his off night last
night. That's definitely key for sure.
And that backcourt can kind of carry the offensive load without Zion or Trey available.
Closing out this edition of Sports Talk, getting ready for Pelicans pregame coverage coming up, leading up to tip-off at 7 o'clock. Remind everybody, the investigation into the deadly terror attack on Bourbon Street continues. The FBI received hundreds of tips, but they still need your help. If you've encountered the murderer anywhere during the visits to New Orleans or on the fateful day, the FBI needs to talk to you. Please call 1-800-CALL-FBI. That's 1-800-CALL-FBI. Wrapping up Sports Talk, we'll be back tomorrow, though, folks. A full boat, 4 to 8. Me, Mike Dettillier, Charlie Long, for all of them. Have a great night, folks, and go Pels. See you later.